Okay, this is it then. Let's go ahead and get started. thanks everyone for joining us. If you're seeing this, if you're seeing this now or watching this later, perhaps. My name is Chris Goodrow with the Content Marketing Show at contentmarketing.tv, and this is my first interview. I'm interviewing Mr. Philip Brooks. How are you doing today, Philip?
I'm great, thank you.
Okay, and you are the content marketing director at SEMrush.
That's correct.
I think most of us, if not all of us, are familiar with SEMrush. Definitely used it in school, and know all of my marketing peers use that for research on their competitors at the very least. We're familiar with SEMrush, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but Philip, why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself and tell us how you got here in Philadelphia, sure. Pennsylvania at SEMrush.
Sure. I had kind of a circuitous route into digital marketing. I started off as a content production person in the video game industry. I worked for Electronic Arts for a few years. I worked on several different massively multiplayer online game titles, Dark Age of Camelot, Warhammer Online, a couple of games like that. And I was primarily a writer in that capacity. So I worked as a content developer, as writing scripts, that kind of stuff. But I also did a lot of marketing materials, game manuals, that kind of thing. And as we started to increase the marketing presence for those products, we started to create content online, to promote the products in a different channel. Obviously, as a video game company, we were dealing with very tech-savvy individuals. So, we were definitely among the first people to, adopt that philosophy of putting stuff online and creating content that would directly work online, and customer base. So, from there, I moved on to CartoonNetwork.com and AdultSwim.com, working on their new media team, working on the website, doing basically the same kind of stuff, content marketing for video games and for the channels themselves. And then I started getting into the private sector. I worked for a company called Webimax, which is headquartered here in Philadelphia, for a couple years as an SEO manager and developed their content production team, managed their writers, that kind of stuff. And now I'm here at SEMrush with a great opportunity to work for a company that's kind of exploding popularity-wise and tool-wise. We're doing a lot of different and new things that we're really excited about.
Yeah. So, it's quite a career. A couple of well-known institutions there where you got an opportunity to jump in and do something called content marketing. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure many of us have heard that term before. I'm a little loose with my definition. Why don't you tell me exactly what content marketing entails as far as what you've done so far with those companies?
Sure. I think, there's a definite, very broad definition. Content marketing has a pretty strong definition, which is they define it as a marketing technique of creating and distributing valuable, relevant, and consistent content to attract and acquire a clearly defined audience with the objective of driving profitable customer action. Now, that's, kind of a mouthful. But I think for us, as day-to-day people working in content marketing, what we're doing is creating content that's razor-focused towards individual groups, groups that we've defined, utilizing marketing data and data acquisition to basically target things to the perfect people that we're looking for and find content for them that they'll not only find useful but actually informative and build that level of trust with the brand and the writer itself.
Okay, so you're talking about, being able to create content that is specifically derived from your audiences. Now, how do you go about doing something like that? For those of us that might be new to this or just want to know your take on it, sure. How do you sort of extract that information from your audience? To take it one step further, if you can go there, if you don't already have a large audience build up, of your own, your own email list, your own following, per se, what is a way for us to dive into where that audience already may be?
Sure. I think, anybody that's worked in marketing for any particular period of time knows that traditional marketing methodologies are far more focused on identifying and segmenting your audience and identifying personas within that audience, and then tailoring the content to fit those personas. So I think, as digital marketing has exploded in the past few years, we've started to adopt those same sort of methodologies. And for me, I think that that's what sets, traditional SEO apart from the content marketing that we've been doing recently. SEO kind of gets people to the door, but content marketing keeps them coming back and keeps them on your site by creating that relationship with the clients specifically tailored toward what they're looking for and solving pain points that they may have, they may be looking for a problem or they're dealing with a problem or, whatever your product can solve for them, that's what content marketing can show them by building that relationship.
Right. Yeah, so are you responsible for basically coming up with titles for articles and deciding what's going to go in the blog section, so to speak, on SEM, correct?
Yeah, we have a really great blog team. We have editorial meetings every week where we go through trends in the industry, looking for what people are talking about, and we have some great contributors that we can flesh out these ideas to, have them flesh out a little bit more. We have some very detailed research that we do, based on long tail keywords and things like that, in analytics to see where the traffic's coming in from. So we can tailor our content in a lot of ways towards that to improve that sort of focus. But essentially we have a very, very strong editorial team. But that's we have a blog person that runs the blog. Her name is Kathleen. She's fantastic. He's the editor for the blog itself. So a lot of times I just kind of set it and forget it. I'll find contributors that I think are great, and she'll run with them towards that second part of the process.
Yeah, that leads us into the next question that I wanted to get into is exactly how does SEM Rush use content marketing? So you gave us a little bit of the mechanics, how you can kind of set it and forget it, and rely on Kathleen there to take care of some of that. You've explained how you're extracting some of these things from your audience, from the analytics based on past performance. So what you're using content marketing, what are some other things maybe that you can reveal to us, kind of pull back the curtain a little bit on how exactly SEM Rush not only determines their content, but then uses it and actually markets with that content?
Sure, absolutely. Like I said, Kathleen is a big part of the blog part, but that's just one very small facet of what we do in content marketing. So specifically what I work on is trying to find partnerships with content creators and other companies within the industries that we can utilize and leverage so we can not only reach a larger audience, but reach an audience that's keyed into our tool and most likely already knows who we are or may have used similar tools and therefore want to learn. We can find ways to show them the value of what we can bring to the table. For example, we recently just did a really large-scale infographic with the people from Hanapin, who are also the people from PPC Hero, where we sat down with them and went through at the ad spends for every single company in the Inc. 5000 list for last year and just showed how they're spending their money online and just showed the amount of budget they're putting in. It really, really put a lot of things in perspective to see not only the growth of how PPC is coming up, but how invested these companies really are. In addition to that, I just finished up a white paper with Larry Kim of WordStream talking about long-term PPC goals. And how to utilize our tool, specifically that, and how WordStream can complement our tool and vice versa. And we also have some infographics on the horizon that we're working on with our developers, and we have some really great designers that we have working on those. And finally, we're really, really trying to put the focus on webinars and video content, which we'll come back to in a little bit, but webinars are a really good tool for us. We get a very great amount of engagement from that, and working with a lot of these different companies, we get some great new ideas, and we get to exchange leads with them, and it's just a fantastic resource for us.
Oh, okay. What are the tools that you're using primarily for your webinars these days?
We really just use GoToMeeting right now. We have some other tools available to us, but that's been our primary channel right now. We certainly are looking into more, efficient methodologies for that. It's a little bit more with the teams that run that stuff. I just set up the meetings and set up the content that, you know, that, that complements that stuff. So.
Right. Okay. I guess that leads me into, you know, this is the kind of content that you're creating and that's working for you. You kind of went into your strategy a little bit about reaching out to folks that might have an audience already and trying to reach their audience through those individuals. And, of course, webinars, interviews, those kinds of are a great way of doing that, you know, hence this meeting right now. What are some ways that you go about promoting? And what I really mean by that is lately I've been expressing some of my frustration on a few media channels. I log into something like Twitter, for example, and I scroll through my feed, and I see I just see link after link after link, and you know, to me it seems that you know, maybe I want to just hop on and read something that's actually on Twitter, or look at something that's actually just there in my feed without having to, especially if I'm on my phone, click on something and wait for 20 seconds or whatever it's going to be to load. That sounds ridiculous, but in this day and age, you know, 20 seconds for you to, you know, just be checking your phone, checking your feed. I imagine a lot of people are shy about even clicking on those links these days. And maybe it's because I'm following a bunch of content marketing professionals, and they want to link back to their content. So what is your view on maybe how to get people engaged and back to your website?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I think what's interesting to me, especially when you bring up Twitter, is that there are certain alternatives to Twitter now. I mean, LinkedIn has become a publishing platform where you can put content directly into the feed, so you're no longer just linking, doing a lot of content curation off-site. You know, you've actually got the ability to publish directly to that platform. So I think, you know, as far as dealing with professionals specifically, LinkedIn's a little bit more along the lines of what you're looking for as far as immediacy goes and getting, you know, content that's right there at your fingertips that you don't have to follow a link, that you don't know where it's going, and that kind of thing. And I agree with you on Twitter. I think you know, there's been so much brought forth about content curation as a strategy for content marketing, and I think, you know, eventually you get diminishing returns with that. There's so, if you're, you know, putting so much stuff up there, it becomes almost impossible to separate the signal from the noise. You know, so you have to find other ways to appeal to people. I think that Twitter becoming a video platform is going to be a big thing in the future. You know, the ability to show some video content directly there. GIFs are big now. You can put GIFs up there. And then images. You know, I think those will help at least, you know, you're not going to reduce the volume, but it will make your content stand out a little bit more to give you the opportunity to, you know, to separate yourselves from what's around you. But, you know, I think we're going, at least in my personal opinion, I'm going away from Twitter as a news source and going more into LinkedIn and places like that where people are self-publishing actual content that I can see without an intermediary step.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's kind of a congruent message with, I suppose, just using each social media platform in a way that it was intended, and kind of, you know, LinkedIn gives you that ability to publish content directly on there, and that content is more engaging, say, than somebody who's just posting a link out somewhere, and it gives you a chance to develop a trust and build a relationship on that platform, so that when you do finally provide a link for them, they're more likely to trust you and go check it out.
Sure.
And risk that 20-second load time because they know what's coming is going to be good. You know, I still feel that, you know, you and I connected on Twitter, and mm-hmm. I still feel that it's relevant even for sharing, but perhaps maybe just sharing those shorter messages. And like you said, you know, there are ways to deliver some of your content through and extending beyond that character limit through images and videos and slide shares and all those kinds of things, which is kind of like I call it like a gateway drug or a teaser kind of content to get people hooked on what it is you're about and what it is you're saying.
Sure.
Not necessarily linking out. at that moment or all the time. But that's just my two cents on it. Anyway, I notice I'm going through. I want to retweet stuff that people have shared, mm-hmm. and I find it difficult to do that sometimes because I don't really want to spend a lot of time clicking and going and finding out what it is and making sure it's valid before I share it with my audience.
Sure.
So I'm not, and just the fact that everybody's got links, I'm more picking out those one or two things that are just immediate and short and deliver value right away.
Yeah, I think what, you know, another side of that coin is that, you know, Twitter has recently announced that they're letting everybody in. They're indexing all of the Twitter tweets way back to when the site came up, you know, which hadn't been available before. So that's going to really, you know, create a lot more opportunity for those older content that was up there to come back up to the forefront. And I think that that's going to really make a difference for Twitter as a medium, at least as a link building platform. You're going to see a lot more of, you know, that those tweets from a long time ago come up and back to bubbling up to the surface.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always changing. It's always changing. And, you know, I think we always find that the majority of marketing professionals are, at least the ones that I see, I can't speak for everybody, but the majority of them, I think, perhaps they lag a little bit behind, and they see what others have been doing, what has been working, and when everybody jumps on that bandwagon, it kind of crowds the space a little bit and crowds the method that's being used a little bit. And, you know, so I think a good rule of thumb is probably just think outside the box a little bit and use some creativity in what you're doing. Now, you have some other ways to help us out, I'm assuming, Rush. Help,
yeah.
Help someone like me or those that might be watching this. How can you help them with their content marketing? I know we use it for some competitor research, but maybe you can give us a breakdown of exactly how someone might use that to develop their content and market their content.
Sure. You know, I think one of the things that you know, that I enjoy about working here is that having come from having done the job in other capacities, I have a pretty good idea of what will work for other people, or at least, you know, my own set of best practices that I, you know, had implemented in the past. So you know, being able to have experience with the tool, you know, it lets me speak to people on the same level that they're, you know, they know that the stuff works. And you know, for my own personal toolbox, you know, I used to use SEMrush all the time for competitive research for long tail keywords to try to identify, you know, keywords that we were able to go after in the SEO capacity, so supported with content marketing, that may or may not have been, you know, the actual competition level was not as high for, but the return was much larger for, because you're getting people that are far further down the sales marketing funnel, and they have these long tail actionable keywords with words like how to and supporting sales words inside those sentences, because they're, you know, writing out full questions, things like that. And for me, you know, that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about using the tool. I used the phrase report all the time as a content marketer when I was working with SEMrush before I came to work here. So SEMrush has a ton of different tools and comparative analysis tools that are built in, but for me as a content marketer, I use that one the most.
Okay. More of a keyword research, keyword discovery tool for those mm-hmm. longer tail keywords.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, when you're putting together your content, how do you use these kinds of things? I mean, you could get a lot of longer tail keywords on the same topic.
Sure.
Do you try to incorporate these into, let's say, one blog post? One document, one bit of content. Do you try to rehash the same content over and over again using different variations of the title, or how would you go about using that keyword list that you?
Right. You know, I like to support everything equally. So if we have a topic that we've gone through our personas and we've identified that this is something that you know, we go back in analytics and say, okay, we're getting a lot of traffic on. Let's just say, for example, recently, you know, we've done a lot of content centered around semantic keyword research, which has been, you know, a pretty big topic recently. It's sort of fallen a little bit off, but we found that in going into analytics that the traffic sources coming in, a lot of them were anything that had semantic keyword research and it was getting a large audience, so they're much larger than we were previously getting. So we would then I would direct Kathleen or invest in the editorial team. If people were looking for topics that we wanted to talk about, semantic keyword search is big. Let's see what we can do about that. And then, I would then find other sources out there to see if there, how many other people are talking about it, and use the tool itself to see what our competitors were using. See what they're talking about as far as semantic research goes, to see how frequently they might be posting about it, or what posts that they've created that have the most impact on their sites. If anybody's trying to pay for that keyword term. If anybody's using that as a paid search term, that's a pretty good indication that somebody's valuing that keyword. Yes. We would try to support the blog post with promotional materials, white papers, things like that. But specifically, we would build kind of a platform that was the blog post itself, social promotion, and then tying it all back to the site itself, perhaps with a landing page.
Right. Okay. Is there anything, we kind of touched on some of this already, but, you're speaking, when you're putting out content for SEMrush, you are in the marketing space, you're in that niche of content marketing, you're in that niche of SEO, and because you are there, there's a lot of other people and businesses that know what they're doing for the most part, mm-hmm. and they're putting out content as well. I think this category, at least on Twitter and maybe a few other social media, is probably one of the most crowded themes, niches, whatever you want to call it. How do you stand out in something that is so noisy and everybody's got, five keyword tips and all those things? How do you stand out in something like that?
Well, I think you make a great point in that content marketing has become one of those business buzzwords that everybody rolls their eyes when you're just shifting paradigms and things. People just say, oh, well, that's content marketing. People are doing that. We have to do that. And a lot of people that go into the content marketing space don't even really understand exactly what it is and what their goal from it is. And I think part of the problem with it is that people aren't defining what they're looking to get from their content marketing. Are they building relationships with it? Is it a conversion tool? You really need to sit down and decide not only what you want to get from it before you can start to calculate ROI from it, but you also need to identify the content that when you have that audience, what will appeal to them as well. So if you're, for example, we're dealing with B2B in our market. So in a lot of cases, the best thing I can do is get in front of somebody who has the ability to sign that check and say, hey, I really think my team needs SEMrush to be able to complete their day-to-day duties. I need to get in front of that person that has the ability to make that decision. So we're trying to find content that really fills that void that says, hey, what do I need to do to convince these people that they need to be able to use our tool on a daily basis, that will make their jobs easier and improve what they're doing. And I think a lot of that speaks to where content marketing falls short for a lot of individuals, because they're not seeking to answer a question, and they're not even speaking to anyone specifically. They're just throwing out stuff about their brand. They don't even know who their audience is. They don't know anything. They're just tweeting into the ether, and that's one of the worst things you can do, because you're just wasting time and resources. If you're actually taking the time to identify who you're targeting, what content will appeal to them, and what your actual goal to get them to interact with you is, you'll have a lot more of, not only will your content resonate more, but you'll have a lot more of ability to show an ROI to the people above you, and you have to justify your own job.
Yeah. And how does somebody, I guess we're covering a lot of ground here, how do you specifically get in front of those people? Are you using tools to find certain profiles on people, or how are you making sure you're getting in front of the right audience?
We're doing a lot of networking and events. We've really ramped up our event kind of content, and so we've been doing a lot of partners with large-scale clients. And, you know, for example, like I said, Birdstream, Panoping, and these are people dealing with huge brands, so they know the players in the game, and they know, you know, what works. So there's no reason for us to reinvent the wheel and try to, you know, find these people that are, you know, hidden somewhere. Those blueprints are already out there. We know who they need to talk to. We want to get in front of those same people. So by leveraging those kinds of relationships and creating, you know, like I said, doing things with them, doing webinars, white papers, you know, e-books with those types of names, we put ourselves in the same audiences that they're in front of, knowing that they're going to be the people that appeal for our tool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people misunderstand that, you know, among all this curation and all these new tools and these new apps and everything that come out, a lot of marketing, especially when we talk about getting in front of the right people, so you're not just spinning your wheels, and you want to get in front of the right people and you want to be engaged, it's a matter of rolling up your sleeves and doing some hard work.
Sure.
Matter of actually listening and responding in real time, and you know, that takes time out of your day. It takes time. it takes man hours. It takes all of these things. So I think that's something that maybe needs to be communicated a little bit more. Maybe it is, and people just don't want to. They don't want to hear that because they want to be sitting but on a beach somewhere while their marketing is running itself.
I mean, that's an excellent point because, you know, I worked for a bank briefly for a while, and it was the same situation. They said, everybody's doing content marketing, we want to do content marketing. And there was no real thought of, you know, the kind of regulatory atmosphere in which they operated. So, you know, they were so handcuffed in what they could say and what they could do in social or in any of those things, and it really made things difficult because, honestly, social wasn't a platform that they could utilize because there were so many things they were barred from discussing. And, you know, another great point you made was that the amount of man hours involved. If you're going to, you know, put yourself out there on social as a business, you know, there are a lot of studies that say people expect you to be able to get back to them in 20 minutes if you post there. If you don't have the manpower to monitor those channels, it's almost not even worth it for you because you're going to create more dissension when you don't respond in real time.
Yeah, being able to listen, I think, is increasingly important. You know, and then when you have and tying that back to content, you know, social is content in and of itself, micro content, native content. But when you're engaging, you have more and more opportunity to specifically tie your website's content as an answer to somebody's question, somebody's problem, whatever it may be. You know, you can listen for. Listen for problems that are happening in your niche, in your industry, whatever you want to monitor the web for, and jump in as a real person and see if you can help them out with the content that you've been creating. So, and as we mentioned already, that can be used both ways, just as content that's already been written, but also being able to listen in that way. As you mentioned before, is going to help you come up with what your new content may be, or at least part of the formula. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of what's been going on, and what others are doing, and we discussed what you're doing. Where do you see the future of all of this going? We've seen a trend. Come through the major trend that's been going on for a while is a lot of content curation, a lot of basically, you know, even if nothing but links, a lot of spamming. That's you can call it advertising or you can call it spamming, but it's a lot of links and it's crowded. We can see that trend going on now. Where do you think it's going in the future?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think content curation has, you know, been overstated as to its value simply because there's so many different people doing it. But I think that, and you had mentioned this briefly earlier about, you know, being able to look at something on your cell phone and it taking so long to load. But I think that really, for me, the future is going to be not only video, but video and mobile. So the ability to view mobile content and video content on a mobile device And then the value of that content is really going to be huge going forward. I think, I have some statistics in front of me, but one of the ones that really sticks out at me is 60% of C-level executives prefer video content over written. Those are the people that sign the checks. Those are the ones that we want to get in front of. So if we can get the right kind of video content in front of them that resonates, that makes them want to buy our product or endorse that product to people who, who work for them, we've done ourselves a great service. But in that vein, SEMrush, our developers, are in the process of working on a video analytics tool. It's something that we've been working on for a little while. We're hopeful that it's going to be coming up shortly. It's going to be the best in the market. But it's definitely something that that we've been aware of, and something that's a trend that we've been monitoring for a very long time.
Right, I've seen the importance of that of that too. Especially when it comes to SEO, I've been able to put out YouTube videos, and when I'm just talking about my little town here in Athens, Georgia, if you want to be geo specific to what you're doing, you can get that on not only the front page of YouTube but of Google. I've had it in the past within about 10-15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a matter of Google preferring its own content, because it owns YouTube, of course. I think there's a lot of opportunities in SEO for video. It seems like a hurdle. It's something that's not overcrowded right now, because it seems like a hurdle for businesses, especially larger businesses, to say, okay, we're going to put time and money into a video production, because they're coming from a world where they're thinking commercials, they're thinking really high production, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're thinking of all the cost that's involved in that. But really, it's rather low cost to get started in video.
Sure. I mean, everybody has those tools available to them now that a cell phone can record a video. We've all got the ability of a small production studio in our hands. It's amazing how that has migrated to really being the primary means of communication in these cases. And I think that, with Vine and Instagram having videos, and now there's Ocho, which is a new 8-second video, which fills some unasked for window between those two, which I'm not really sure that model, but it's really something that people are trying to not only monetize, but to pop on and utilize as much as they can.
Yeah. So tell me more about the analytics tool that it's on its way from SEM. What is that going to do exactly? I guess it's going to be a little bit beyond the YouTube analytics that's there.
Yeah, I mean, what we're looking for, it'll certainly be, the POs, have just kind of given us a taste of what they're looking to do. But I can assure you it's definitely going to be something that's going to take that same trend that we look for, which is comparative analysis. We really want to let people use the tool for competitive analysis. We want you can look at what your competitors are doing and compare that to what you're doing and find a way to improve what you're working on. And learn from other people's mistakes. And that's one of the things that I always try to emphasize with SEMrush, is that you can use SEMrush not only to see what other people are doing that's working, you can see what other people have tried that doesn't work. And that's, I think, an invaluable tool to be able to see what's failed and not make those same mistakes again. And I think that, one of the things that I've noticed with video is that it's not optimized in almost every channel. You can go into YouTube and look at almost every video there. If you go into in the background settings, people don't fill out 90% of those meta fields that are available to them. And I think that when our tool is able to show people what other videos are like and how those indexable fields work, they're going to realize how many missed opportunities we've had to get these videos optimized for search. And that's really what we're trying to show people, how to make your video optimized for search.
Yeah, and I think that's... like you said, so many people don't do it. I think it's a way where you can jump in and grab some of those more competitive keywords that would usually be a very big struggle for you to get any traction on when you go to a blog or something like that. It's going to take you a few months, maybe. It depends on your blog, to start ranking or to index. You throw those same things in the video, and it could happen practically overnight as of right now, depending on what it is, but definitely much quicker.
I mean, we've all had that situation where you're looking at a video on YouTube and you kind of go down that hole where you're looking at different things. All of a sudden, suggested videos that pop up in your feed have nothing to do with what you're looking for, but it just shows you how the videos that are optimized will rank, and the ones that have nothing in them, you know, are not really doing a lot of service for the people that are creating them. And, you know, again, the blended results page on the result and SERPs is, you know, that video that just shows that it's right in front of you, it's right at your fingertips. So, you know, it's a whole brave new world when it comes to search.
Right. The other thing that's coming to my mind right now is you know, thinking about the videos that I've done in the past, what I've noticed in video, you can tell me if you've seen this as well, and if you've seen this in other types of marketing, is that I think the pace and the consistency that you put something out, it really helps to drive this momentum when you're doubling up the content that you're creating, and your activity on social media kind of creates this momentum and this snowball effect that will drive people over to your content. But if you kind of stop for a little while, everything just takes a big dive. Now it could be a little bit different if you're looking at your Google traffic or your search engine traffic. But I imagine if it's not happening already in the near future, Google is also going to be noticing if it's taken a dive and if it's less on people's minds and lips and less being shared and less being visited. So it's going to start impacting there too. So how important right now and in the future do you see the consistency, the importance of consistency in your content and engagement also on social media?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have lots of examples of, you know, people have their editorial calendar set up for, you know, what they think is their ideal frequency, the amount of time to pump out content. You know, I think that, you know, you can get a little bit too far down the rabbit hole with that. There's a lot of, you know, the statistics certainly do prove certain time frames and things, but in the end, are you pumping content out because you have something to say, or are you actually pumping things out, you know, as a holistic marketing tool that actually meets a purpose? And can, you know, so if you're just, you know, I have to release an article every single day at a certain time because that's what the rules say, then, you know, that's not, you're doing yourself a disservice. If you have something to say and you're really just getting stuff out there to, you know, to deflect the pain point for a client, then that's a different story. But I think that, again, it goes back to those people that don't have a fundamental understanding of what they're trying to do with content marketing. So they're following this you know, this cookie cutter path and not really understanding why they're doing anything other than the fact that, you know, it's said that this frequency is more important to do. I think that certainly, you know, we all are under the impetus to create more and more content because that's just the way that the content marketing field is being sold to people. But I think, you know, again, just like SEO and keyword stuffing, you know, quality will always trump quantity. And I come from a writing background, and there's a lot of things that there's not a lot of things that make me angry, but really poor content, especially coming from agencies and things like that, that people sell to clients, drives me insane when I see it. And it's so obvious when you read it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a balancing act, definitely. I mean, when you're trying to convince a business to stay competitive, sometimes they themselves don't have a lot of time to produce the content, and then, you know, they who they hired don't know much about the subject matter either. So it's definitely difficult to strike, I'd say the right balance, because, you know, they obviously need help. Are there any strategies that you've come up to maybe overcome that a little bit and strike the balance, get the quality up a little bit better?
When I worked in an agency setting, you know, it was always very important to me that myself or any writers that were on a given campaign to really sit down in the beginning with a particular client and just agree on what their voice is, you know, who their audience is, who they're trying to speak to, and so we can tone, you know, we can adjust that to make sure that we're speaking to people in the correct voice. And again, you're absolutely right. You know, if you're writing, especially something that's really, really, you know, esoteric, like if you're talking about banking, if you're a person that doesn't understand banking, you know, it's going to be difficult for you to write something that's going to appeal to somebody that's that specialized and focused. So I think that in a lot of ways, as much as I enjoyed working in agency setting and that kind of thing, you know, sometimes you can write the more, you have somebody in an agency that can work in a more broad term, but you might have to take the extra time and money to get real experts and thought leaders to write on those particular topics for, you know, those kinds of esoteric subjects. And I think, the other thing I like to do is sit down with them and just define exactly what they want to talk about. You know, what are the pressure points or changes in their industry that's something that we can easily research. You know, are there competitors that are doing it right? Are there competitors that are doing it wrong? What can we look at? You know, that kind of thing that will allow you as an outsider to be able to write a little better or from a better, you know, sense of understanding. But sometimes you really just need to spend the extra money and get an expert in there. I think that's something that's more, you know, and it doesn't mean that the agency doesn't have value. I mean that the agency can work in concert with, you know, a freelancer or somebody who's much more qualified than somebody that's in staff or in-house to be able to write something that's going to resonate with that audience.
Good stuff. So we need a call to action to these to this hangout. Certainly go on over to semrush.com and check out their tools. Is there anything specific that you think the audience listening to this should pay some closer attention to?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're in the process of releasing new tools all the time. We're constantly updating our tool. We most recently just added a PLA tool for product listing ads, which, you know, obviously for e-commerce people, we're pretty excited about. It's, you know, it's still in beta. They're still adding stuff to it, but right now nobody else is doing it. And so we think that, you know, with the holidays coming up, it's going to be particularly useful for people in those fields. But you know, we have a great development team available to us, and they're always working on some new stuff. So, you know, check back frequently, hit our blog up as much as possible, and if you have any questions about anything that we've talked about today, please reach out to me on Twitter or on Google+. I'll be happy to talk to you.
Yep. So going over to semrush.com, see what new tools they have coming up. Use what's already there. You can start using it for free. It'll give you a sample of the types of information that you're going to be getting. Check out what your competitors are doing. See how they're either succeeding or failing. And that's it. I just want to thank Mr. Brooks here for coming on for this interview. And
it was fun.
Yeah, it was. Hopefully, those who are watching got some insider tips, insider information. It might not have been as glamorous as you wanted it to be. There's no magic formula, but there's a lot of rolling up the sleeves, doing your research, and SEMrush could definitely help you get those things done. So thanks once again. Thanks for watching. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Content Show on YouTube, or please visit contentshow.tv and get all your updates there. Hopefully there's more great interviews like this coming around very soon. Thanks again.
Have a good one. Thanks, everyone.